From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Los Angeles Unified School District on Tuesday failed to come to agreement on a proposal to slash police funding in Los Angeles area public schools by 90%. The proposal, brought by board member Monica Garcia, laid out a 50% cut for next year, followed by a 75% cut the year after that, and 90% the year after that. The funding freed up by police would have gone towards supporting services for Black students. But school board members did not have the appetite for such a move, even though the nationwide demand to defund the police in U.S. cities has gained political traction. U.S. public school budgets are often dominated by armed law enforcement officers at the expense of teachers, counselors, nurses, and support staff. Advocates of defunding school police point out that while the justification for police presence was to prevent mass shootings, in reality, police have simply replicated in schools what they do on the streets, criminalize and violate Black and brown people. My guest is Judith Brown Dianis. She is the Executive Director of the Advancement Project National Office. Welcome to the program, Judith.
Thank you for having me.
So first, people outside the United States might be quite shocked to learn that our public schools have armed officers roaming about the halls. And I mentioned that school shootings prevention was the reasoning behind which we've seen this trend in the United States. Can you give us a broader briefing of why we have police in schools?
Yeah, sure. So it actually goes back before the school shootings. Actually, in about the 1950s is when we started to see police on school grounds and in schools. And that really was actually in reaction to student protests. So that's where they got their start. And then let's fast forward to the 1990s when the 1994 crime bill, which put a lot of money into policing across the country, but also into, it's really what created what is we call mass incarceration, was a period in which we started to see more, we started to see federal money being put into police and schools, but also things like metal detectors, all with this idea that that we had to protect young people from what was the drug, the drugs on the streets. And this was the war on drugs required us to actually do that. And so we started seeing federal funds creep into paying for police and schools, and that continued to grow. Now we do see that when we have these incidents of mass shootings, that there is a new call, people start to ask again for more police in schools, but it's gotten to be such that the presence of police in schools in the United States is overwhelming. So if you think about, we have different kinds of police. So we have security, right, who often are unarmed. Then we have, in some school districts, we have armed security. And in some districts, we have what we call school resource officers, who typically are officers who are part of a local police department, who the school district pays for them to be part of the school building. And in some places, you have one in every school building. And then we have districts that have their own school police departments. And so that means they have a chief of police who reports to the superintendent, but they also have officers, they have drug sniffing dogs, they have cruisers, many of them have been part of what is called the 1033 program. So they were buying military style equipment. And so as much as our country just has been in this punishment mode, right, and in a criminalization mode that has leaked into the schools. So that's kind of how we got here.
So it's a patchwork approach, district by district. And I should mention that the 1994 crime bill that you mentioned was championed by Joe Biden when he was senator, which is just such a shame. So so there are certain school districts where you have police, armed police, that are funded directly out of the school budgets. That means that they're taking money away from things that students actually need, like nurses and counselors and of course teachers.
That's right. In Chicago, for example, where this week we will see the school board taking up the demands of young people for police-free schools, they spend $33 million out of their school budget, $33 million on police. In Los Angeles, it's $70 million. Dollars. And so, this is, I mean, it's a
Amazing.
large bill. It's being taken away from other things that they could be spending it on.
So, what are the impacts on schools? We have still had mass shootings. I mean, we, the most horrific of the recent ones being the Parkland, Florida shooting, where a so-called, I believe it was one of the resource officers, one of the police officers that was supposedly in there to help prevent just this sort of thing, ended up being outside, didn't go into the school, ended up, calling for reinforcements. Meanwhile, you had kids getting slaughtered. What have police actually been doing in schools? It's particularly when it comes to
Well,
black and brown kids.
yeah, so what we have seen is that the presence of police runs counter to the kind of environment that we need to build for young people to nurture them and so that they can thrive. I mean, police are what they are is that they're law enforcement, and so what they do is that they enforce the criminal code. And unfortunately, that is a culture clash with what is supposed to happen in a school building. And so we see police often engaged in typical disciplinary matters in school buildings. But what happens is what could be something where a student gets detention or they just get a stiff talking to or a call home becomes actually something that they get ticketed for or that they get arrested for. So things like disorderly conduct, kid running down the hallway and yelling as he's running down the hallway and being told to stop and doesn't stop, that becomes a disorderly conduct. And so what we see is typical adolescent behavior that could be handled by the school is then turned over to the police to handle. And we know that once they get involved and once a young person winds up in that system, that it is an unforgiving system and that they will see themselves coming in and out of that system just based on that first contact. And so
I
it
mean,
is
that is
this
literally the
criminal.
beginning, the school end of the school to prison pipeline.
That's right. So I mean, what we found was kind of like as Advancement Project, we were doing this work. We started in 1999 doing work around discipline. By about 2003, we figured out, oh my goodness, this actually schools are a direct pipeline to the juvenile and criminal justice system. And it happens with this existence of police in our buildings. And that what is happening is that, especially for Black kids, this is the other thing is Black communities, as we've been seeing over the past few weeks, right? Black communities do not trust the police in their neighborhoods. And so why should
With
they
good
trust them in
reason.
this? And why should you trust them in your school hallways? Because they're actually doing the same thing. They're racially profiling young people. We've also seen a number of incidents of excessive use of force. Some of them have been we've seen on TV, like the one in South Carolina, where a young woman was black girl was taken from her seat over a cell phone, and not just taken from her seat, but literally like pushed and pulled out of the seat by an officer. We've seen other ones where young people, maybe running away from the school building, tracked down by a police officer who picks them up and slams them to the ground. Our website, wecametolearn.com, has a map that's called the Assault at Map. And what we've been doing is trying to track some of these incidents of excessive use of force against students. And they're all of them, most of them are Black students, but they're Black and Brown students. And that what happens is just like police get off when they kill somebody, they're getting off. They're getting a pass when they do this in a schools. And so really what has been happening is that young people across this country have been the ones taking up the charge, calling for police-free schools. It didn't just start with Minneapolis. This has been work that's been going on for quite some time.
So the justification for police to be in schools is that they are instilling some sort of discipline, that they are keeping students safe. But how do teachers and parents view that? Because it's, especially parents, it's their kids. Are there parents who think that police in schools are a good idea? Are there teachers who rely on police to help them discipline kids?
Yeah, so it's a mixed bag, right? So we have places like Chicago where the Chicago Teachers Union has joined forces with the young people who are calling for police to be taken out of schools. The same in Los Angeles, where the teachers union, and in Seattle, the teachers union has joined forces with community folks. Yes, there are parents. There's a mixed bag of parents, right? But I think what is happening now is that America is seeing that our police don't keep everyone safe. That what we know in the Black community is that white people get protect and serve, and Black people get law and order. And so to have police who you don't trust to be around your children is not what we need. And in fact, what we need instead is an investment in young people instead of investing in police.
Now, not all schools have armed police officers. Do you find that schools where there are majority black and brown kids are tend to have armed officers?
Yes. And what, there's this saying that
Because I
like
mean,
when,
white parents wouldn't tolerate this.
right. So there's a saying about how like when white America sneezes, Black America gets pneumonia. Well, that's the same thing with police. So when we see these school shootings, for example, they've been in predominantly white schools. And often what happens in those places is that the people, the parents, the community says, that shooter was a young person who needed somebody to help them. They needed someone to support them. They needed somebody who with a mental health counselor, right? They don't need a cop. And so, but what happens is they might go for the counselors. Meanwhile, after an incident, meanwhile, the Black school where actually the shooting did not happen are the ones who get the criminalization, get more cops, more metal detectors, et cetera. And so there's this other narrative around the criminalization of Black people in our country that leads to that kind of response.
So tell me how students in particular have been leading the charge and the fight to get police out of their schools well before we had this mass national uprising against the police killing of George Floyd. This was an existing conversation, just as, of course, the call against the call to fight racist policing in our streets and cities has also been a pre-existing movement that, white America seems to have now discovered.
Sure. So Advance on Project, we're 21 years old this year, and we actually started doing work around the school to prison pipeline when we opened our doors. It wasn't called that yet because we didn't have that level of analysis when we first started doing the work. But we were working with parents and young people who understood that Black and Brown students were being pushed out through suspensions and expulsions, what became known as the school to prison pipeline. And pretty, like I mentioned, like about 2003 is when we realized this connection between police and the existence of police and the fact that there were these school police departments. And so young people have been like at the forefront of this fight. They've been organizing students and groups like mine support those young people. So in Chicago, we work with a group called Brighton Park Neighborhood and Asada's Daughters. In Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Student Union. In Miami, Power U Center, the Black Organizing Project in Oakland are some of the groups who have been organizing young people. When I say young people, I'm not talking about like 20-year-olds. I'm talking about high school students
Wow.
who have real clarity around the way in which they feel threatened by the existence of police in a school building and how it undermines the educational process to have those people around. And they're the ones who can recount stories about their interactions with the police in school. And so we've been, so we have this campaign with another group, the Alliance for Educational Justice, which is a youth organizing alliance for that is called Police Free Schools. It's a Police Free Schools campaign. And we've been doing this work around organizing and understanding the budgets. and then making the calls at school boards to like get rid of police, and Minneapolis and the death of George Floyd really presented this opening for America to realize that the police don't make everyone safe. And so it was easy for us to kind of move into this moment and say, okay, let's start moving resolutions in places for police-free schools.
And Black and brown kids in particular in public schools, I imagine are traumatized already from seeing over-policing in their communities, from seeing people looking like them and perhaps they themselves being targeted by police. I imagine that these are the same communities that really could use the extra support, nurturing, and you know, the kind of counseling that a school can provide, that the funding that is currently going toward policing could actually go toward, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, there's an estimate that there's about 1.6 million students in this country that go to school with a counselor but no cop. Hmm. I would say it's probably worse than that, right? That's like an estimate. And so what students need and like what they say they need, this is the other thing, is like, let's listen to what they say they need, right? Is that they need this nurturing environment where there are counselors, where there are restorative justice programs, where the culture of the building is to make sure that everyone feels safe and nurtured and loved and cared for. And that does not come with a police officer who's carrying a gun. And so, you know, in this moment around kind of like the defund movement, but also like police-free schools, which again has been in existence for a while, what we're doing is saying that money, that $33 million in Chicago public schools could be repurposed. Let's get rid of the police and let's give young people the love and the care that they need to survive. You know, we're going back, young people are going to be going back to school in a pandemic, right? It's not like it's over. But especially for Black and brown young people, the trauma of living through a pandemic where there is illness and there is death all around you because our communities have been hit the hardest. Young people are in isolation. They have seen all of this happening around them. And add to that the police killings and the demonstrations. When they get back to school, they're going to need people that make them feel safe and loved. They're going to need nurses. Many schools do not have a nurse, a full-time nurse. Who's going to take the temperatures of kids when they're going into a building? Is it going to be the police officer? Hmm. And this is the other thing, is as we look as a society at all the things that we have said we have ceded to police to take care of, right? When there's a homeless person, call the police. When there's a person who's having a mental health episode, call the police. What we're saying is, let's stop doing that. Let's actually have the solutions that we know would be better for our communities. If the person has a mental health incident, then let's call somebody who is a mental health professional, who also knows how to de-escalate, who has actually training in child development. Right, cops,
and who's not carrying a weapon.
Right, who's not carrying a weapon. They're not going to de-escalate. And they also are going to get pressed by this young person who's kind of like, as they say, feeling themselves as an adolescent, right? And is going to push back and resist, right? So so we're just looking for something different. We've got to radically reimagine safety in our country. And we should start with schools because that's where our children are.
And Judith, you were saying that kids coming back from the summer, as this pandemic rages, we are seeing the economic collapse impact city budgets and, of course, impact the budgets of school districts. I mean, I cited at the beginning of our conversation the Los Angeles Unified School District that is considering, you know, trying to figure out, the state of California, you know, is trying to figure out where they're going to be slashing you know, parts of the school budgets. And there's always talk about cutting teachers, cutting school resources, never talk about cutting police. So the same kinds of conversation when city budgets are on the chopping block and police are always untouched, at least pre-George Floyd's killing. You see that playing out in school budget discussions as well. The police are generally off limits, and if anything, they are often given increases to their budgets, right?
That's right. And that's because we carry this narrative around our safety is number one priority, and police are the way that we get safe. And so we now have an opening and a moment where we have a realization that that is not how we feel safe, especially for Black people in this country. And so the trade-offs, right? We know that when there's budget cuts, the first things to go are like guidance counselors. The first thing, the next thing to go are nurses. And actually, restorative justice programs are actually the very first thing to go, right? These alternatives to discipline, which aren't just about like the things that happen after, but restorative justice programs are around the preventative too. And so those are the first things to go. And we've got to stop that. We've got to reprioritize so that we can make sure that young people feel like they are being supported in a school building. $33 million in Chicago, that is a lot of money that could be repurposed. And the other thing is we have to consider is in LA, the resolution there was to cut, I think, like $20 million from the budget. Realize that the one that I think passed, and that $20 million apparently is not like a real cut. It's like the freeze that they're going to do on like hiring and on salaries. So
So
no,
they
we need to
basically just
deep cut.
cut the increase that was planned.
Exactly. So we know, but and we need deep cuts. We need like real money that can be reinvested in different ways.
So, given that website that you were mentioning earlier, where people can find
Sure.
the resources to, if they don't already see this conversation happening in their public school district, you know, where they can start that conversation.
Shoot, we have two websites. One is wecametolearn.com. Wecametolearn.com. And that one has the report on it that we've done that highlight some of the tactics that we've been using. Also has the assault at map that documents some of the incidents of excessive use of force. And then we just started a new website, policefreeschools.org. And that one is going to track some of the campaigns and the resolutions that are passing. As we know that more school districts are taking up this issue, which we know we've had great success in the past few weeks, and this week we expect to see a few more, including Oakland. And so we'll be documenting those things, but also giving people the tools that they need if they are interested in taking up a campaign locally.
So policefreeschools.org is a future website that will be
Yes.
available, but the ones that people can look at right now are the wecametolearn.com, and then I understand that your own organization is at advancementproject.org.
Yes.
Judith, thank you so much for joining us today. Really
Thank
appreciate your time and
you.
insight.
Thanks so much.
My guest has been Judith Brown Dianis, Executive Director of Advancement Project National Office. We've been discussing the defunding of school police. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.